Good evening to all. I hope you have had a good, a pleasant afternoon. This is very strange for me to meet at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know how long have you been doing this, but we just got done with lunch, and now we have to go and worship with the saints. But it's pleasant, and I hope that no one is going to fall asleep during your nap. I am very happy to be here with you. Many of you have been here in the other times that my family and I have passed through. And if not, I want to introduce myself just briefly and tell you a little bit about myself and tell you why I am here. My name is David Rafe. My family is here. Let me see if this works. There we go. All seven of us are here tonight. We're a little bit under the weather as well, but thanks to God, we were able to be here with all of you here tonight. My name is David. My wife's name is Amy. Sophia is the one here on the back. She's 10 years old. Katie is right here. She's 8 years old. Emma is 6 years old. Alex is the one upside down. He's 3 years old. Joanna is now, she's almost 2 years old, but in the picture, she was about 8 months old. But that's my family. We have been working and worshiping with the congregation in Guatemala for the last 6 years. For those who are geographically challenged, here's a map of the North America and Central America. Here we are in Alabama. I'm having trouble finding Alabama. And here's Guatemala down here. And it's a small country, about the size of Tennessee, but 2.5 times the population of Tennessee. For the last 6 years, like I said, my wife and I have been spending time there in the country of Guatemala, and now we're returning home, back to the States anyway, and we're looking forward to starting a new work in a new area. It reminds me of what happened when Paul went on his journeys. Paul went on a journey for several years, and then he came back in Acts chapter 14. And the first thing that he does is he goes back to the place where he was sent there in Antioch. In Acts chapter 14, verse 27, it says that when he arrived, he gathered the church together, and he began to report all the things that God had done with them and how he had opened a door of faith to the Gentiles. And they spent a long time with the disciples. Paul spent time with the disciples there talking about, reporting to them the work that God had done through him in other areas. And so there's precedent, biblical precedent for what we're doing here tonight, to talk about the work that other people are doing. And that encourages us in two different ways. It encourages us, number one, to glorify God. That's where the emphasis was placed in this scripture. It does not talk about what he began to report all the things that Paul had done in all these different places, but it says very clearly the work that God had done with them. When we hear about the work that other people do in other places, it ought to give us reason to glorify the great God that we serve. It ought to give us reason to say that we serve such a great God, that the gospel that we have in our hands, same gospel that works in Guatemala, or the same gospel that works in South Africa, same gospel that works in China. We may speak different languages, but glory be to God that same message of what Jesus did on the cross has power in all those different countries. It ought to encourage us then to glorify God, but it also ought to encourage us to get busy here. We ought to listen, and we ought to be encouraged by what other people do, but then also to realize that the gospel needs to be taken to my neighbors and to my friends and to my family who still have not been reached by the gospel. And so I hope that in talking about the work that I have done, and I don't want to spend too much time on the work that I've done and our plans, but I want to especially talk to you about some of the Christians that the congregation here has been supporting for much longer than just 6 years. But to talk to you about the work in Guatemala, we were there for 6 years. We were worshiping in a congregation that's called, here's Guatemala. And we were worshiping in a place called Quetzaltenango, Guatemala, which is right here. It's the second largest city in the nation of Guatemala, about 3 or 4 hours from the capital, depending on how fast you drive. But we were there in Quetzaltenango. I was not the preacher there in Quetzaltenango. Rather, we shared that with many several men. I would preach once or twice during the week. But most of the time, most of my work was spent outside the congregation, working in the community, working with neighbors, working with friends, working with the brethren. A good bit of my the work that I did was in training young men to learn how to preach. Not just how to preach, but how to study the Bible and how to use the Bible and get the most take advantage of what we have in it. I spent most of my time where the red dots are. These are congregations that I know of in Guatemala. Of course, the Lord knows who are His, and I don't have the perfect list. But these red dots are the congregations that I'm familiar with, at least in the country of Guatemala. So you can see the corresponding to where the population is in Guatemala in the southwestern portion. That's also where the churches tend to be. What's interesting about this, especially with regard to the work that this church has done with the five men that it's supporting, these churches have in some way been touched by those five men. It's an amazing thing to think about. Now, of course, what I'm saying has been touched. Maybe they have never been. Not all those five men have ever been to Kamoha, but someone who knows them has been. And so, what started out as a very small work of four men has now grown to be quite a number of congregations. There's about 35 different congregations across Guatemala. It's a small country. There's about 35 congregations. The majority of those congregations are very small. They're very small and they're very close together. They're small congregations. There's a congregation just where we were living. We lived about, if you took your take go in a car, you could get there in about 10 minutes from one congregation to another, maybe 15. But they're very close to one another, both groups being very small. And it sounds, 10 minutes away, that's maybe not in Athens, Alabama. But why do you need two different congregations 10 minutes away? But if you have to walk those miles, I think you can see why there is a necessity to have a congregation in this community and a congregation in another community. But they're very small congregations, very, very close to one another. They're immature in a lot of ways. None of the congregations that I know in Guatemala have elders, and so there's a huge vacancy of elders. If any of the elders want to move down to Guatemala, I'm sure that they would be glad to have some more maturity down there. But we're working on that. We had a large series of on elders when I was there in Quetzaltenango. The church there in Quetzaltenango is made up of primarily young families with lots of kids. And so we fit in pretty well when we were down there. But none of those men, I don't think any of those men will be ready to be elders for another 10 years, another 15 years. Who knows how long it's going to be. But where becoming an elder doesn't start when you're already 50 years old. It starts when you're very young. And so people there are already looking toward having that goal. Still, as far as I know, there are no congregations with elders. Generally, the congregations there are very immature also in their biblical knowledge. There's a lot of theme studies that go on in all the churches, but they study about love, they study about the church, they study about worship, all very good studies, all essential studies, but sitting down to study the book of Matthew, or sitting down as a congregation to study the book of Acts, it's just not something that they do down there. Traditionally, that's not something that they do. And so that has left a some immaturity in the churches generally in their understanding of how the Bible works as, or how the book of Acts, for instance, works as a book. How to use the book of Philippians as a letter. I spent a lot of time with the brethren there trying to encourage that type of study, working through books. And that has been tremendously encouraging and successful. It's very energetic work there in Guatemala. You have very young Christians. The majority of the Christians there are, as we would term, first-generation Christians. Most of them don't have examples of parents who have been Christians all their lives. Everybody's new at this game. And as a result, many times what we see is a very energetic attitude toward the work. Everyone is involved, and that's highly encouraging to work with as a gospel preacher as well. I spent my time mostly in Quetzaltenango, but I did quite a bit of traveling as well, visiting these congregations. But mainly, there's one congregation here in San Pedro that I would visit on once a week. There's another congregation in Pachach where I would visit weekly. And there's another one up here in Huehuetenango, where I would visit once every 2 weeks. And then there's a new, I wish I could tell you a lot, some more information about some of these places. Very encouraging people. And maybe if we have time later on, we can chat about that. But I wanted to just briefly tell you what I've been doing for the last 6 years. We've been very, very busy and very enthusiastic, very encouraged by the work there in Guatemala. Some good brethren in Texas have been supporting us to do the work there. But now we have changed gears a little bit. We have always had the idea that Guatemala was a temporary endeavor, that we would be there for, maybe we'll be there for 2 years. We'll 2 years change to six. And then after 6 years, we said, well, we'll go home eventually. We'll go back to the States eventually. And we had in mind maybe in 2014 we'd start thinking about it. And maybe in 2016 we'd actually do it. Because of some personal issues, health issues, my mother, for instance, is having some health issues. And we feel like her son has been gone too long and we need to be at least in the same country. We decided to come back. And we were looking at 2015, 2016. But finally, there became an invitation from the city of Philadelphia to go and start a work there in the city of Philadelphia. I think some of you know the Smelsers. Many of you know the Smelsers. And Scott Smelser and Jeff Smelser, who have been working there in the Pennsylvania area for a long time, have had their eyes on Philadelphia for a while. It's the fifth largest city in the United States. And currently, as far as we know, and the Lord knows who are His, as far as we know, there's just one congregation up in the north part of Philadelphia. If we're thinking of a large city like Dallas, a city like Dallas has a slew of churches, and it's tinier than Philadelphia. But Philadelphia, being the fifth city in the United States, there's only one congregation. And that congregation, as far as I know, from what I hear, is about 15 or 20 members. And if that's all the Christians in all of Philadelphia that are being lights in that city, that's a huge misbalance in how many Christians and how much population. All in all, Scott and Jeff have been eyeing Philadelphia for some time. And they decided Scott wanted to leave the group there in Gettysburg and go and help to plant a church there in Philadelphia. He was especially looking forward to starting a group. And for those who know Philadelphia, in the southwest portion of Philadelphia near Upper Darby. And in that area, there's a large population of immigrants from Africa, from Asia. And he's especially excited about getting into communities like that. Many times we joke about the Northeast not having any interest. And many times, not to be racist, but many times it's because we look for white middle-class Americans to talk to. And we look for people who are like us, in quotes. And so we're looking for populations that have not been here in the United States for very long. There's a large population of Hispanics, and that's part of the reason why they wanted me to come on board. There's a large Hispanic population in Philadelphia. The U.S. Census of 2010 posted that there were 200,000 Hispanics in Philadelphia, just Hispanics. And 60% of those are from Puerto Rico, and that has its advantages. Puerto Ricans have no legal problems in staying here in the United States, and so we're really looking forward to getting it into the Spanish community, Spanish-speaking community, and having some good results with that. But Scott had this plan. Jeff had this plan, and they decided to do this. Invited me to go down there, and we, Lord willing, we are going to start the congregation just this coming Sunday, so the 12th of January. And I pray that what is the word in English? I beg that you will pray for us in the efforts that we have. It will be a challenging effort. It will be an exciting effort. But we ask that you will pray for us, that the Lord will give us His grace, and that we can give Him the glory as we go to this new area and plant a church there. It's interesting, being in Guatemala, when we first went down there, we were terrified. I'll just have to be honest. We were terrified to go down to Guatemala, but we went. And it's funny, because after 6 years, you kind of get used to one place. And now we're very comfortable there in Guatemala. In fact, we're more comfortable there than we are in the United States in many ways. And now, the thought of going up to Philadelphia, we are scared to death. I'm a Texas boy, and I'm not from the north at all. And all this news of snow and sleet and ice, and I'm ready to turn around and go back south. But all in all, we're really excited about the work. Being serious, we're very excited about the work, and I pray that you will pray for us, that you will lift up our hands in this effort, in all of this. The church here has never supported me financially on a consistent basis, but I've tried to come and be with the Christians here as much as I can, because the church here at Eastside supports 5 men who have had such an influence there in Guatemala. I have to come by and say thank you every chance that I get. I have invested quite a bit of my life into the country of Guatemala and into the Christians there. And the amount of influence these men have had on the work, and continue to have on the work there in Guatemala, is tremendous. And I wanted to tell you very briefly and very quickly just a little bit about these men. Maybe some things that they don't say in their reports. Maybe it's all the same thing and you've read all their reports. But to encourage you to know these men, to know them. For they are instruments of God. And you have had such a wonderful privilege in having a relationship with them. But I have the suspicion that when I put these pictures up there, you might think, who is that? I can't even pronounce his name. And there's something that we're missing. And this is not just maybe in this congregation. I really don't know what your habits are in knowing the men that you support. But it is very troubling to me that in many congregations that support a man, this man has no... We don't know this man except that his name is on a paycheck somewhere. And that he is nothing more than a name. But as far as the work that he's doing, I don't know. Some other brother said that he's doing a good work, but we don't know. Or how often have we communicated with him? Have we ever met him? Many times we have to say, I don't even know who he is. We're supporting him, but who knows what kind of work he's doing, and who knows what he believes? Who knows what? We really ought to give effort to knowing the men that we support as a church. And I say that not just because we need to be good administrators with the Lord's money. This is true. But I tell you what, being a gospel preacher, even if Guatemala is your own land, it's hard work. And sometimes you get discouraged. And if it's just to receive a thank you in the letter, just to receive a question about the work that they're doing. Just to receive some type of communication with the brethren that have sacrificed to give you livelihood so that you could do the Lord's work. Tell you what, that means so much more than just a paycheck. To have a relationship with a community of believers. Believers that are saying, we are praying for you, Jeronimo. We are praying for you. I cannot tell you what encouragement that is to a preacher of God's word. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about these men, and I am going to challenge you, each one of you, to write them a letter. I know you have their letters back here. I know they only speak Spanish, and that's the daunting part. Well, there are lots of translators on the internet, and sometimes they come out saying very strange things, but still, it's very, very encouraging. I want to challenge you. Send them an email. Send them a letter. Send them something to tell them that you are thinking of them, even if it's just, I prayed for you today. I'm kind of getting off talking about them, and now I'm talking about something else. But I did want to say, just as personal experience, there's a brother in Texas whose name is Mark Adams. We knew Mark before we went down to Guatemala, but I came back after 3 years to the United States, and I greeted Mark, and he told me a little secret about what he prays for. He says, David, Thursday is your day. I pray for you every Thursday. I cannot tell you how much that means to me. I have someone praying for me, and I know that there are people praying for me here in the States. And I know that my hands have been lifted up, and Guatemala can be a very dangerous place. Guatemala can be a very dangerous place as far as violence and health issues, and we have 5 kids in this country. But we have often thought about that, you know, it could have been a lot worse. We could have had a lot of problems in this country. But you know what? We have a suspicion that we didn't have very many problems at all, because we have people and brethren that are praying for us constantly here. I give thanks for brethren like that. Pray for these men. Be a support to them, not just in a check, but also in having a relationship with them. Let me tell you a little bit about Guatemala. Again, here's the map of Guatemala, and these are each one of these circles represents one of the men that you are supporting financially. And I don't know that maybe you're not going to be able to pronounce the names afterwards, and maybe you won't be able to remember the names of all the places. So I'm not going to give a pop quiz at the very end. Don't worry about that. I hope that this whets your appetite to learn more and to know more about these men. I'm going to start over here in the in this corner over here. This is where a good brother named Jose Maria works and worships. He worships in a place called Palin. Jose Humberto, the son-in-law of Jose Maria, that's going to get confusing in a hurry. Jose Humberto works and worships in the city of Rio Bravo. And I'll tell you a little bit about them in a minute. Francisco Ventura, for us gringos, works and worships here in Zumpango. Here is Ricardo Ventura. He works and worships in the city of Chicacao. And then in Quetzaltenango, we have Jeronimo Koch, who is a man that I deeply appreciate. He's a very good man. Very good man. I'll click the stop crying. There we go. Francisco Ventura. I'll tell you just a little bit about these men. Francisco Ventura. I know these men, and I know the work that they do. And I can commend these men. They're very good men. I know better Jeronimo Koch and I'm going to cry again. someone's going to have to bring Kleenex up here for me. But Hedonim, I spent 6 years working and sometimes sweating and bleeding with this man. He was a father to us while we were down there. Really, really good man. And so I know him better. I can tell you lots of things about Hedonim that he won't put in his reports. The other men, I don't know them as well. But I'll just tell you that. Francisco Ventura, it's interesting. Francisco Ventura, the four men that are right here. Jose Humberto is a new Christian, practically. He has been around, he's been a Christian maybe for 5 years, maybe for 7 years or 10 years. But the other Christians here, they've been Christians for maybe 20 years, 25 years. When I was born, they were being born again. These brethren used to live, all four of them, if I'm getting the story straight, all four of them lived in the capital for a certain amount of time. Then, through the influences of Wayne Partain, influences of some other preachers, and I apologize for not remembering all the names, but through those influences, there became an uncomfortableness with the way that the offering was being used. Using it to support institutions, using it to support universities, using it to support other things that really just not biblical. These four men became aware of some of those issues, and they decided to start a church because their conscience would not allow them to continue worshiping in other ways. So Francisco Ventura had his home opened, and the church began to meet there in his home. And for some time, these men did not receive any financial support, but they did the work. And that just says a lot for these men. They did not receive anything from any church, but they were doing the work, and they would knock doors, and they would go and present the gospel and to everyone around. In spite of the fact that they had to do a lot of work secularly in order to provide for their families. Francisco Ventura is a very an interesting individual. He and his wife are here. This picture was taken in 2006, so he's a little bit older now. He and his wife, Yolanda, are pictured here. It's also missing a parrot. She has a pet parrot that goes along with her everywhere. In fact, the Christians had to talk to her about taking the parrot outside when services begin. It's one of her children almost. They don't have children, and so that was part of the story. But he is our go-to man. Anytime that you need to come to Guatemala, we call Francisco Ventura because he lives there in the capital, and he will come to meet you. I think some of you know Douglas Bain from Tennessee, the Tennessee area. He came to visit us along with Catherine Bishop from Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Francisco Ventura has been very, very kind to us to drop everything that he does to come and pick us up at the airport. He has been working for the longest time in a city called Sumpango. The church there has grown, it has grown to the point where, from what I have heard, and I'm not sure if he's how far along in his decision-making process he is, but from what I've heard, he is interested in leaving this work on a very friendly basis, but leaving this work to go start a church in another area. And that is how really the work works in Guatemala. You start a work until it can survive, and you go off and you start another work, and you start another work. And so many brethren in Guatemala have such such respect for this man, Francisco Ventura. He has another brother who preaches. His name is Ricardo Ventura. And he worships on the other side of a lake. This is Lake Atitlan. And over here in Sumpango, Francisco lives in the capital, and he drives out to Sumpango twice a week, if not more, to have Bible studies. Ricardo Ventura is from Chicacao. All the Venturas are from Chicacao, some of them have left. Now, Ricardo Ventura is still in Chicacao and has been instrumental in growing the church there in Chicacao. Here's a larger picture of him preaching there, or making announcements. I'm not sure what he's doing in this picture. But he is a military man. He went and he was in the military for several years here in Guatemala. And I think it shows in his character. He's very, very disciplined. He goes and he runs all the time. And he respects punctuality, which is very strange in the country of Guatemala. This is kind of a moment here. We were right here. This is a picture taken in a place called Jutiapa. And this was a interesting moment where we had several preachers coming together for a Bible study there in Jutiapa. And Ricardo was there. Jose Maria, I'll talk about him in just a moment. Jerónimo was also there. And this young man is a man named Manuel Ventura. There's lots of Venturas that are working in the gospel there. Manuel Ventura. Manuel is a mechanic. He is a mechanic, but he is a really impressive young man. He is the son of Ricardo. He is a mechanic, but he takes his time to every time that he has. He sacrifices his shop in order to go work with a church for a weekend. He sacrifices his shop and goes and studies the Bible with someone. But it's amazing how much he is involved with works in several different places. He's 20, I think maybe 25 or 26, single, if there's any takers here. But he's a very impressive young man. But that shows you, if his son is like that, it tells you something about his father as well. Ricardo Ventura is really amazing, especially when, I'll go back over here, when you think about all the different congregations where he visits. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he does visits all these different congregations, but he's on the move all the time. He does not have a vehicle. He does not need a vehicle. He gets on the bus and he goes everywhere he wants to go. And he's been, we're always hearing him encouraging Christians in several places around the country. Jose Maria is here in Palin. And this is a new thing for him. New thing as in, I think maybe about 2 years ago is when he started working with the Christians in Palin. There was not a... He went to work with a congregation there in Palin, and then he started a new congregation in the city of Palin. He used to be all the Coches. He is Jose Maria Coche, and all the Coches are from the city of Rio Bravo. And what he had been there in Rio Bravo for who knows how long, just 20 years or so there in Rio Bravo, and decided that it was time for him to, on very friendly terms, time to go and work with some Christians who are very needy here in Palin. So that's currently where he is. This picture shows him still in Rio Bravo, preaching gospel. Interesting thing about Jose Maria, everybody makes short jokes about Jose Maria. Guatemalans generally are very short. The average one comes up to you. I'm not very tall in America, but I feel like a giant when I'm in Guatemala. And then Jose Maria comes, and Jose Maria comes up to me about right here. He is very good-natured about the whole thing. Here is Jose Maria's family. This is not the whole family. He is a very large family. Here is his wife. In fact, Francisco Ventura was here on this occasion. But all of these are his children. I forget his name. His son here is also a very impressive young man. He's about 20 years old now, and he's already very, very enthusiastic to preach. William was baptized not too long ago, but he has grown quite a bit since we have been there in the country. This is his daughter here, Jose Maria's daughter here, and this is his son-in-law, whose name is Jose Humberto. Jose Humberto now is in his father-in-law's stead. Jose Maria moved out to Palin, and when he moved out, Jose Humberto took his place. He took his place, but then he also moved away. And so now there are other Christians that are there in Rio Bravo. But Jose Humberto has been very active in not only in Rio Bravo, but there's a city called San Juan Bautista. There's also a place called Morazan that have been growing, and he sacrifices himself quite a bit in order to get to some of these places. Morazan, for instance, is a place that is, I think it's about 30 minutes. He has a little motorcycle that he takes to get out there, but sometimes not even the motorcycle can get across these mud pits that form in this place. And so he has to get off and push and slog through the mud in order to get to this congregation. But it's a congregation. He says it's growing. They invited me to come down. Sadly, I did not have time before I left Guatemala to go and visit them. I visited them one time, and it was a smaller group. He says now that they've grown. He goes out there maybe once, I think about once or twice a week, to study with the Christians there. For a while, it just telling you a story about him tells you about what kind of character he has and what type of worker he is. He had a motorcycle that took more oil than it did gasoline. It took more oil. The gaskets were all over the place, and he had oil leaking down his motorcycle. And he said, "Okay, brethren, you buy me a quart of oil, and I'll come out to you. I can't afford the oil." And so he said, after a while, he said, "Okay, I'm gonna spend my own money, and I'm gonna buy half the quart. You buy the other half, and we'll meet halfway." But he was so, in spite of this motorcycle, sometimes would break down, and the tires wouldn't work, or so. He'd have to walk the motorcycle all that distance, all the way back. It's a huge sacrifice to go out to some of these areas. But it shows you what type of character he has. Here's a bigger image of Jose Humberto. He is a very young man, very energetic as well. I did not get a chance to know him very, very well, but he seems to be a very good student of the Bible. And a good worker. When he has to, he also is a carpenter. And so I love the Jose Maria is a carpenter as well. And then he gave his shop when he went off to Palin. He gave his shop to Jose Humberto. He told me recently that nowadays he doesn't do very much in carpentry. Every once in a while, there's a job that he'll do. But he's given himself more and more to the gospel, and now he has less and less time for making doors. But I appreciate the ways that he has found to support his family as well. Let's see, and now we come to Jeronimo Kosh, and we're going to see if I can do this without crying. Jeronimo is just an exceptional man. Just thinking of all the men that I know, even in the world, this man is just exceptional. Has taught me many things about how to lay brick. Has taught me many things about how to plant corn. What he does, he will talk to you to death about so many different interesting things. Just an interesting individual. But besides that, just I've learned so much from him spiritually as well. I think in this picture, I love this picture of him sitting down in front of. We're in a city called Camuja, and we're sitting. He is preaching to an individual who eventually was baptized that same day. But he is there. I think in this picture, you can see a little bit of his character. He is calm. He is direct. He is helpful in all of his words. He is a grandfather to so many. It's interesting that I have latched on to him, but also my kids have latched on to him. He's just a wonderful, wonderful man. Just to give you an idea of the character of this man as well, there is a problem in Guatemala when Guatemalans are not content with their income, with how they are making a living, and looking at the Joneses, they decide they need a car too. They need a two-story house too, and they need this and that and the other, and they decide we just can't make it here, and they go off to the United States. I really don't want to get into political issues, but coming from our perspective in Guatemala, this is the worst thing that could have happened to some of those families there in Guatemala. Looking at young children who the father has left, the mother has left, the kids have been left, the grandparents. Nothing against grandparents, but it's just not the same. It's not supposed to work like that. And sure, they're supporting them, sending a paycheck. They're sending George Washington's to Guatemala every so often. They're supporting their family financially. But there's a father missing in that family. There's a mother missing in that family. And it's not right. And I get so, so sad thinking of the mothers in the congregation there in Quetzaltenango who are single mothers. Oh, they have their husbands over there in Beaumont, Texas. Or their husbands over have one up in Philadelphia. I hope to get to know him a little better. But practically, they're single moms. And they have to figure out how to raise these young men. A mom can't do everything that it needs to raise young men and show them how to be men. Jeronimo has become a father, a grandfather, to not just his own, but to so many in that congregation. And it's amazing to see his dedication and to see the love that he gives to some of the children there. He doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to. He could say, I shouldn't be that way, and wag his head but he takes time. And he goes and he studies the Bible with young men and young children who have practically lost their parents or lost their father. There's one case we have a young mother who has, I'm going to get the number wrong, but it's something like six children, six young boys. Amy's wagging her head. I don't know what the number is, but you have young boys. This mother, her husband went to the United States, and now he's in prison. Who knows how long he's going to be in prison? But now she's stuck without any type of income. She has all these young children. What is a mother to do with that? She can't go to work. Because if she goes to work, she has to abandon them at home. If she goes to work, her hands are tied. And the Christians have been very good to her there in many ways. There's some Christians who have looked for work among themselves to give her ways to work, but then also stay at home. Ways for her to just have what she needs to live. The brethren have been very good to do that for her. But I think the person who has done the most for this sister is this man here. Jeronimo has gone every week to study the Bible with the young men there. Oscar wants to preach. He's 12 years old. But he is bound in his heart. He's going to preach the gospel. Both of the oldest ones, Jeronimo says, pretty soon they're going to be baptized. I feel like they're going to be baptized pretty soon. They know so much. He doesn't do that just with one family. He does that with several families. he is doing this work. And the church there in Urbina does not have elders. And I think part of the reason is just that we don't have enough men. But he is doing a really good job in being that type of support to so many families there. And not just in Quetzaltenango. But Jeronimo does travel some as well. I think he's doing less and less now that he sees such great need in the church there in Quetzaltenango. Jeronimo's very, very, of all of these men that you have been supporting, are very well known among brethren in Guatemala for the hard workers that they are and for the good seed that they have sown in so many ways. So I can't thank you enough for the participation that you have had with them, and in some way then the participation that I have had with you as well. Working in this country of Guatemala has been a wonderful experience, and I am grateful to God for the opportunity to work for Him, but also the opportunity to know these good brethren. This is the church in Urbina Cantel, Quetzaltenango, with which I worshipped on a regular basis. We have about 45 men and women, Christians, about 50 youngsters. Very challenging for the Bible class teachers, the two of them. I wish I could tell you more about the people here, and maybe on another occasion we can sit down and chat about them, and even with them. We could call them if you like. They were just wonderful people. But before I left, the brethren there in Quetzaltenango told me to tell you, saludos a los hermanos en los Estados Unidos. Greetings to the brethren in the United States. In the spirit of Romans 16:16, to greet the brethren, to greet one another. They wanted to send their greetings to you and to tell you of that, let you know that they exist. They're your brothers. They're your sisters. And in lots of ways, they're a lot different from us. And I think that's what comes to our mind when we think of people in other countries. They're so different. But really, when you take away all the, take away the poverty, take away all the superficial things like the poverty, like the health concerns, the color of your skin, and take away the ways that they, the culture that they have, all those things are just superficial. It's been amazing to me to know them as people and understand that they are just the same as you and I. They are your brothers. They are your sisters. And they wanted you to be encouraged to fight the good fight that we share. I want to leave just a few words from the New Testament. I know I've taken quite a bit of time, but I want to leave just a few words from the New Testament before we go. In Matthew chapter 28, and in verse 19, we have some verses that are very, very familiar to all of us. Very familiar, in some ways very daunting. Go therefore, says Jesus, go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Jesus said to these disciples, go. I cannot imagine what fears, what challenges these disciples had. I think it's a challenge going to Guatemala. I think it's a challenge going to Philadelphia. And I squirm at the thought of going to Philadelphia and being in the snow and being in a place that's not my culture. I feel challenged. But could you imagine the thoughts of these 11 men who are not professional evangelists. They're not highly trained public speakers. They're just fishermen, tax collectors. And Jesus says to them, these 11 men, don't, not just go into all of Jerusalem, go into all the world. What was Andrew thinking when he heard this? You see, there was a part of him that was saying, I don't know how to get to Rome. I don't even know what language they speak in Egypt. How do I do this? I don't know. So many doubts and so many fears that they had. But what started with 11 men has now reached Athens, Alabama. What started with 11 men is growing strong in Guatemala. What started with 11 men is going to Philadelphia. I think that is awesome. To think that something so small, like a mustard seed, grows so great that it will outlast all the kingdoms of the world. And it is because this daunting task that Jesus gives also comes with a wonderful promise. He says, go. But then at the end of the verse, he says, lo, I am with you. I am with you always, even to the end of the age. And we can look at the book of Acts and show how Jesus did go with the disciples and show how he did invest his time, would we say, his efforts in these men. He didn't leave them to one side. When Paul was in Corinth, he said, I am with you. Do not be afraid. I am with you. I have many people in this city. Work. Go. Preach. It's amazing to me that we still have today this task of spreading, telling people what we have seen and what we have heard. To spread the gospel. And though we have doubts and though we have fears as well, we have an incredible task to do. But let us have faith that what little I can do, with what little hands I have, God can use those hands. And God can use those efforts to His glory and His honor. You look at these 11 men, and by the end of Acts, Paul is meeting Christians now in Rome. You look at these 11 men and look how it has exploded across the world. You look in Guatemala at the work of 4 men. But now there's 35 congregations. How many Christians are there as a result of these men touching their lives? Let us not be ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God. And let us not lose heart, because we have that gospel in our hands that has touched our lives. And let us use that gospel to touch the lives of others. And let us have faith that Jesus is with us always, even to the end of the age. I hope that you were impressed, not by anything that I say, but I hope that you are impressed by what God has done. And not just in Guatemala, but in so many places. To touch the lives of so many people. And I want to, before we end, say that we need to think about what Jesus has done for us. And maybe there's someone here tonight that has also been touched by the power of the gospel and realizes that Jesus, yes, is the Christ. He is the Son of God. And that you want to give your life to Him in baptism. I want to invite all who are ready and willing to respond to that invitation to come forward as we stand and as we sing.